Well, a fitting hymn for our passage that we're going to look at today in Luke 6. I invite you to turn there as we're going to hear Jesus's sort of the rest of his sermon or part of his sermon here about love and about not judging. And so to kick us off here, we got some videos about some short little skits about not judging.
This has a fractured fibula. Well, center it. So I can be able to go home tomorrow.
Daddy's going to be so excited.
That killed him.
Paging Dr. Palmer, Dr. Barbara Palmer, dial 452.
Hello. How much are they asking?
Well, that's a lot of money for a deck.
Well, I hate to tell you this, but you're getting robbed. Did you hear me? You're getting robbed.
Ow! Stop!
AmeriQuest, an open-minded, equal opportunity hunter. AmeriQuest Mortgage, proud sponsor of the NFL.
Look at the cute dog.
Don't judge too quickly. That's yes. Humorous reminders. Good reminders. If you don't remember anything else about the message, just remember, don't judge too quickly, all right? But let's get into this together, okay? We're going to see how not judging is an important part of how we treat others. So look with me at Luke 6, 37. Turn there with me if you haven't already. And look what Jesus says. It says, "Do not judge, and you will not be judged. Do not condemn, and you will not be condemned. Forgive, and you will be forgiven." Jesus' words. One of my seminary profs mentioned that this verse is our culture's John 3:16. That is, it is a verse that everybody knows in our society and that everybody quotes more than any other verse. Do not judge, and you will not be judged. Actually, the word judge in Greek, it means several different meanings, okay? Here are some of the meanings that it does not mean here, okay? Jesus is not talking about judging in a court of law. Jesus is not talking about evaluating between things. For example, evaluating between sin and not sin, okay? The meaning here is basically what we normally would think of. It's not passing unfavorable judgment on or expressing a critical opinion about. It's a lot like the next word that Jesus says, do not condemn. Okay? So Jesus is confronting judgmental and condemning attitudes. He's not saying the government shouldn't judge. He's not saying we can't evaluate things. He's saying don't have the kind of attitude that is judgmental, that doesn't overlook fault or forgive wrong, but holds on to it. A condemning kind of attitude. Kind of like the woman that was riding the bus one night, and a drunk gets on the bus with her, and she says, "Let me tell you, son, you're going straight to hell." And the man jumped out of his seat and said, "Oh man, I'm on the wrong bus again." I did a Google search for those words, don't judge. Don't judge. I couldn't believe the number of things and times and blogs and everybody is posting about don't judge me. You know, it was like erupting off my screen. I read and read and read the quotes. And what struck me most is that people in our culture are so hurt
There's a reason why this is the John 3:16 of our culture. It's that people are so hurt by judgmental people. They're hurt. They've been misunderstood, misrepresented, mishandled, mistreated. They've been misjudged by their looks, by their talent, by their popularity, by their wealth, their style, on and on and on. Have you been misjudged? Ever been misjudged? It's painful. And so online, I was just reading, there was erupting with strong feelings like, you know, it's always the people who know the least about you who want to judge you the most, they're saying. Or things like, don't judge a fish by its ability to climb a tree or to live its whole life believing that it's stupid. Person after person feeling obligated to say, don't judge my path until you've walked in my shoes, till you know my story. You may know what I've done, but you don't know what I've been through. You have no idea the kind of battle that I've faced. Pain. And hearing other people's pain on this reawakened my heart to its importance. There's a reason why Jesus teaches this, because it hurts to be misjudged. And he cares about people. He hates to watch people being suffer by being misjudged or ostracized. And so he says, very simply, do not judge. Do not condemn. Do not hold a grudge. You know, similar to last week, Jesus is teaching here on what love looks like. Last week we saw that love is what? It's self-sacrificing, right? It puts the other person in front of yourself. You treat others as you want to be treated. That's love. Here we see that love is not judgmental. It's not self-righteous. Okay? You know what strikes me about a judgmental attitude is that it sort of shuts the door on somebody. Sort of assume, you know, it assumes you don't want a relationship with them. You don't really care about their future. It's just you sort of condemn them in your heart and you're content to let them go. But love isn't like that, of course. It keeps the door open. It wants a relationship. It hopes for the best for them. And it knows that the end of their story isn't written yet. It's like that hymn we just sang. Lord, may you help us to love each other, if not as they are, at least as they may become. It's this heart, this long-term heart for people. And God himself is this kind of person. He is merciful. He's kind to us, even when we're his enemies, as we talked about last week. And he invites us into sharing into his heart for this world. Not only that, but look with me at verse 37 again. It makes it clear just how important this heart is to him. He says, do not judge, and you will not be judged. Do not condemn, and you will not be condemned. Forgive, and you will be forgiven. This is a strong language, okay? It's like the Lord is saying to us, don't judge or else. Okay? Or else. You know, said more positively, Jesus is saying that forgiven people forgive. The people who have been freed from condemnation don't condemn others. Jesus is saying, in another way, he's saying, there's no such thing as a graceless Christian. There's no such thing as a forgiven person who doesn't forgive. Okay? Take that to heart. That's a big deal. Okay? Jesus transforms his own. And so the question for each of us is, have we let Jesus transform us? Are we grace-filled or are we graceless? Now, none of us are perfect. I'm not trying to say that. We all struggle in this stuff. But Jesus is obviously saying that grace is a characteristic of those who have received grace. So here's a no-fun homework assignment for you, all right? I want you to write down sometime all the people or the types of people that you have that you're prone to judge. That when that person pops in your mind or when you see that kind of person, the things that instantly come to your heart are on your gut. We all have it. We all got it. And let's just get it all out there and say, Lord, help. Help with this. Change this in me. I don't want to be this kind of person. There's this great story about Rosaria. I don't know if I'm saying that right. Is that this Hispanic pronunciation? Rosaria, maybe? Champagne Butterfield. Rosary, I'll just call her Rose. How's that? Rose is a tenured professor at Syracuse University. Her and her lesbian partner were members of a Unitarian church where Rose was the coordinator of what is called the Welcoming Committee, which was the gay and lesbian advocacy group. Up until this point in her life, Rose said that the only Christians she knew were intellectually impaired. They were the kind of people who sent me hate mail, she says, or the people who carried signs at marches that read, God hates fags. But her negative image of Christians would radically change when she met a local pastor named Ken and his wife, Floy. There's another interesting name. Eventually, that friendship led to her conversion to Christ. But here's how Rose described that first encounter with these authentic Christians. She wrote this. She said, I remember being self-conscious of my butch haircut and the gay and pro-choice bumper stickers on my car. I wanted to get to know these people, but not at the expense of compromising my moral standards. And my lesbian identity and culture were very important to me. I came to my culture and its values through life experience and through research and deep thinking. And I liked this Pastor Ken and his wife, Floy, immediately because they seemed sensitive to that. During our first meal together, I remember holding my breath and waiting to be punched in the stomach with something offensive. I believed at this time that God was dead, and that if he ever was alive, the fact of poverty, violence, racism, sexism, homophobia, and war was proof that he didn't care about his creation. I believed that religion was, as Marx wrote, the opiate of the masses. But she writes, but Ken's God seemed alive, three-dimensional, and wise, if firm. And Ken and Floy were anything but intellectually impaired. Ken and Floy did something for me that has a long Christian history, she says. They invited the stranger in, not to scapegoat me, but to listen to me and to learn and to dialogue. We didn't debate at first. They were willing to walk the long journey to me in Christian compassion. They did not share the gospel with me at first. After our meal, they did not invite me to church. And because of these glaring omissions to the Christian script as I had come to know it, when the evening ended and Pastor Ken said he wanted to stay in touch, I knew that it was safe to accept his open hand. Since this beginning, the journey on which the Lord has taken me has been a great adventure, and this simple meal was the first leg of this journey. Before I ever stepped foot in a church, I spent 2 years meeting with Ken and Floy, studying Scripture and talking. They knew that I couldn't come to church. It would have been too threatening at that phase in the game. Too weird, too much. And so they were willing to bring the church to me. Isn't that an awesome story? Awesome story. Rose is now, as I mentioned, she's a Christian. And she has actually found significant victory over same-sex attraction. She's actually married now to a Christian pastor. And largely because some Christians weren't judgmental. But they were gracious, and they brought her along as they discipled her and taught her and reached out to her. Powerful, powerful, powerful. Well, let's go on to another aspect of what Jesus was talking about here. In verse 38, look there with me. Jesus continues to talk about love, and he says, give, and it will be given to you. A good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over, will be poured into your lap. For with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. You ever, you know, when you're eating cereal on the morning and you look at your box and you see in the fine print, down, after you open the box and see there's like, where is the cereal in here? There's like no cereal at all. And then it says in the bottom, you know, packed according to volume, you know, may have settled during shipment, right? Okay, this same phenomenon was back thousands of years ago. And so what they would do when they measured things by volume, they would have a system where you would actually shake it into there and push it in and lump it over and kind of overflow it and so that you knew you were filling up the thing and there was no shady business of this thing that we have today with our chip containers and whatever. It's like, and so this is what he's talking about here. Okay, and he's saying if you are generous like that, if you fill up your containers that you're giving away to overflowing, he says, guess what? In that same way, it will be measured to you. Jesus is saying, love is not stingy, it's generous. It's generous. We've been talking about that a lot as we go through Luke. We're going to talk about it more. God's heart's generous. reminds me of this quote from the 4th century by Ambrose, St. Ambrose. Listen to what he said. He said, "There is your brother, naked and crying, and you stand confused over the choice of an attractive floor covering." Ouch. Timely for us too, isn't it? Strong rebuke that if we really love others, we will be generous. Last week I mentioned the verse Proverbs 19:17. Okay, this is that one I mentioned, guys, in the Welcome to the Family class. I was going to say it, so you can fill in your blank. All right, here's what it says. It says, "He who is kind to the poor lends to the Lord, and he will reward him for what he has done." The Lord will reward you. He'll take what you have given, and he will measure that in that same measure back towards you and even overflow that. That's what this verse 38 is saying. Okay? That if you are extravagantly generous, he will be extravagantly generous to you. Okay? Don't let this fly past you. Right? Imagine you have a fabulously wealthy, like, billionaire friend who came to you and said, "You know, I got to go on a business trip for a month, and I really need you to wash my kids. And I'll tell you what, I will repay you for your time based on how generous you are with my kids." Okay, so how much time you spend with them, what you do for them, how you give to them. And let me just tell you this, he says to you. And you know it's true because you know this guy. And he's awesome. He says to you, "Believe me, I will make it worth your while. Be generous. I will make it worth your while." What are you going to do? What are you going to do for that month? Okay. I know what I do. I clear my schedule, right? I would do. I'd book the trip to Disney World. You know, I'd do whatever I could for his kids for that month because I know he's going to repay far beyond what I could ever give out of my measly pocketbook, right? And that's what Jesus is offering here. He's promising this to us that it will be poured into your lap, overflowing. With the measure you use, it will be measured to you. God will not disappoint you in your generosity. It was awesome to hear one of you guys in Welcome to the Family today talk about how when you first started giving to the Lord, you felt like you couldn't. It was like you're like fighting it out of your hand to get the money into the offering or whatever. But now you've seen the Lord bless you in all kinds of ways. Okay, now I'm not saying, and Jesus is not necessarily saying that he will do that in exactly the way you think he will, financially, spiritually, emotionally, relationally. But certainly in heaven, he will fully reward our generosity. It will be fully worth our while. We can trust it. Jesus guarantees it. Reminds me of this amazing story from American history of two young men who were working their way through Stanford University. At one point, they decided to ask the great concert pianist from Poland, Paderewski, to come to Stanford for a concert. But this pianist said that he would only come for a guarantee of $2,000. So they agreed. They thought they could get enough tickets sold. And however, they foolishly, accidentally scheduled the concert for a break when all the kids are going to be gone from college. And so it gets time down to the wire, and they've only sold like 2/3 of the tickets they're supposed to sell, and they're $400 short. But this guy comes, and he performs, and afterwards he comes to them for his money, and they say, "Here's all we have. We only have 3/4 of it. I'll tell you what, we'll give you a guarantee that we'll pay it back, and here's some things that we can give you and do for you to promise that we're going to pay it back, and we're going to work, and we're going to do this." And he says, "No, boys, that won't do." He said, "Here's money for your expenses. Just give me the rest of it, and I'll be happy." Well, years passed, and this concert pianist, this Paderewski guy, actually became Prime Minister of Poland. This was back in the early 20th century. And following World War I, thousands of his countrymen were starving. And only one man could help, the head of the U.S. Food and Relief Bureau. And so Paderewski, not called him up, but whatever, telegrammed him up or whatever back then, and said, "Help us, please. Thousands of my countrymen are starving. Would you please help Poland?" And he received back thousands of tons of food from the head of the U.S. Food and Relief Bureau with a note that said, "You don't remember, but you helped me once when I was a student in college." The head of the place. It's a phenomenal story of God turning our generosity far beyond what we could imagine and giving it back to us in incredible ways. And so, let's do it, right? Let's give generously. Let's take God up on his promise. Let's live that way in looking forward to what he has. Well, okay, Jesus not only teaches about treating others graciously, okay, but he also teaches next about how we train others. Look with me verse 39. Jesus also told them this parable. Can a blind man lead a blind man? Will they not both fall into a pit? A student is not above his teacher, but everyone who is fully trained will be like his teacher. See what he's saying? He's saying that a learner will become like the leader. He gives two examples of that. He says the blind man and the disciple both fall into the same pit. And not only that, but the student learns everything the teacher knows, especially back in that culture where you only had one teacher and you get trained by your rabbi or whatever. The point, of course, is this, and hear this. Who are you following? Who or what is influencing you? You better choose your influences and your leaders very carefully because you will turn out like them. I've often mentioned that if you show me your influences, I'll tell you what your life's going to be like. I'll tell you 30 years down the road what your life's going to be like. You just show me your influences. That's just how it works. That's what Jesus is saying here. I have a video here about a particular species of army ant that is completely blind. And the only way that they can move is to follow the scent of the ant in front of them. And maybe you've seen this before, but basically the system works great when it's working great. But if the guy in front of you gets off the pattern for whatever reason, this is what happens. Okay, maybe he gets bumped or whatever. What happens is they'll actually get caught in these circles because the guy gets bumped and then he turns around and then they keep following and pretty soon they call this like a death circle because the ants, they literally will never get out of this. They will die in the circle because they're blind and they can't get out and they're just following the scent of the guy in front of them. It's a phenomenal example of what Jesus is talking about here, that blind leading the blind. You want to end up like that? Right? Okay. Last week, one of you very humbly and brokenly told me that you are in this incredible mess in your life because you followed the advice of some unbelieving friends. You're honest. You know what? You had people in your life telling you to do this. You deserve it. You're worth it. Whatever it is, and your life is messed up now because of following the blind, leading the blind. Another one of you told me recently that part of the reason why you're here at River Shores is because even though you haven't walked with God for decades, part of the reason why you're here is because you want, you're hoping that this influence will rub off somehow. And in fact, this passage again is affirming that. It's if we take the posture of a learner at the feet of Jesus and pursue godly influences, it will rub off. It will rub off. It will affect the way we live and our lives. In fact, Jesus is saying here that we can even be transformed to be like him because everyone who is fully trained will be like his teacher. That's why this book is so important that we study every Sunday and hopefully outside of Sunday. It's a way for us to be taught and influenced by Jesus. It's a way for us to follow the wisest leader ever rather than some blind guy running into pits or some ant circle of death. Last weekend, my daughter turned 5 and we had a birthday party at our house. And one of the things we did was the game Pin the Nose on the Snowman because we did this Frozen theme thing. And I have a picture of... we had fun doing this. We were blindfolding the kids and we're spinning them around, you know, and they're bonking onto all kinds of things, you know, trying to bounce on the couch and the table. And they're having a hard time finding the snowman. Why? because they're blindfolded, right, and dizzy. And then we give our littlest guy the chance to get up there. And I got a picture of him, too, of Emmett. And we spin around, put the blindfold on him. And as he gets up to the front, he manages to put the nose perfectly. I mean, perfectly on the nose. And all the kids are gasping, and they're going, what in the world? And I come up to Emmett, and I see the blindfold has fallen just about here. You know, he didn't volunteer the information, but he got it just perfectly, right? What's the difference between him and everybody else, right? It's his sight, right? The fact that he could see. And that's exactly what Jesus is saying here, is that no one can see as clearly as him, as Jesus. And so in order for us to truly see things as they are, we need to know his book. We need to know his heart. We need to be around influences that rub off on us positively, and so we aren't just running blind and smacking into painful things. And so let me ask you guys, are we actually doing that? Are we actually doing that? Are we being people who are going to church and are pursuing opportunities like small group or Bible study or personal Bible study or things that are shaping our worldview to be able to see rather than be blind? Well, let's continue to look at his training plan here. Okay, look with me at verse 41. He says, Jesus says, "Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, 'Brother, let me take the speck out of your eye,' when you yourself fail to see the plank in your own eye? You hypocrite! First take the plank out of your eye, and then you'll see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye." It's a powerful passage confronting our hypocrisy. The fact that human beings, you notice this, we love to give advice but not deal with our own junk. You know, we might even feel like it's our gift to tell people where they're wrong. Okay, But the gross irony of this all is that we're often pointing out the sins in others that we are doing ourselves. You know, it's the sickening phrase here in that verse we just read. "Brother, let me help you with your sin." When he is an obvious hypocrite, and Jesus is saying, "You're a hypocrite." Ouch. You know, that word hypocrite in the Greek literally means a play actor. It means what's on the outside is not matching up at all with what's on the inside. Our act doesn't match up with our character. And Jesus doesn't like it. And so he confronts it head on here. And he compares sin, isn't it interesting, to a beam of wood stuck in your eye. Okay. He's recognizing that sin hurts, that sin is bad, that it destroys. It's like an optical tumor that destroys vision, ruins life, and it's got to be removed. It's got to be dug out at all costs, like a painful surgery. But he insists that we start with ourselves rather than our neighbor. Reminds me of the joke that I like about a man who was having some difficulty communicating with his wife. And he concluded it was because she was losing her hearing. And so he decided to conduct a test without her knowing about it. And so one evening, he sat in a chair on the far side of the room, and her back was to him in a different chair. And so he said very quietly, "Can you hear me?" There was no response. And so he moved a little closer and said, "Can you hear me now?" Still no response. And he got even closer and said, "Can you hear me?" No response. And so he gets up right behind her and says, "Can you hear me now?" And to his surprise, she turns around and irritatedly says, "For the fourth time, yes, I can hear you." Isn't that like us? We think it's their fault. We think they've got the problem, and we judge. And Jesus says, guess what? You better look in the mirror. You better deal with your junk first. And look squarely at it. You know, it's hard, isn't it? Take a good look at our junk. It's hard. It can be super hard to come to grips and admit we're wrong. But we got to continually do this, Jesus is saying. Okay, so right now, let me just ask all of us to do that. Just look inside. Look in your heart. Ask the Lord what things he wants you to change. You know, you don't want Jesus looking at you and saying, "You hypocrite. You hypocrite." You know, so just come clean. Come, tell him you're junk. Ask him for forgiveness. Ask him to change you. You know, we have to do that all the time. Jesus says, first take the plank out of your eye, and then, what does it say? And then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. Your brother's eye. He's saying, don't try to be a surgeon until you can see. Because sin blinds our ability to help and train others effectively. Let me say it like this. Character has to come before confrontation. Your integrity has to come before your influence. To be a great leader, you have to have great character. Okay, also notice what Jesus is not saying. He's not saying, when he says, don't judge, he's not saying, don't train others to follow God. Okay, a lot of people in our culture, he thinks that's what he's saying. He's not. He's not saying that no one should ever confront you about your sin and help you remove it. If someone confronts you, don't say to them, don't judge, man. They may be God's help for you to help remove the tumor that's destroying you. No, if sin is like a tumor, it's got to be removed, and we do others a favor to help them remove it. But we don't do them a favor if we're half blind. If we show up on the, if we take our person on the surgeon table and we're just wielding stuff that we can't even see what we're doing, you know, that's bad, right? In September of 2009, a 20-year-old tradesman was hammering in a nail at a construction site in Australia when the nail flew in his eye. He then, and this is not recommended, he then pulled the inch and a half nail out of his eye before the paramedics could arrive. The attending paramedic said, the man has appeared luckily to have escaped serious injury to his eye, but he did have some blurred vision. You think? Right? You got a nail stuck, it goes in your eye, it's going to mess up your vision. And that's what Jesus, of course, is saying. Is that we have to remove our sin before we can effectively help others and lead others. You might say to me, but Pastor, I'm not leading anybody. I'm not leading anybody. I'm just living my life. But I would say, whether you know it or not, your life is influencing others for good or for bad. You know, when I was talking with Henry about this, you know, Henry, your brother is looking up to you. There's always somebody who's watching. And so we got to make sure that we're removing, constantly removing our junk so we can help others. Otherwise, we're going to be like the blind leading the blind, like driving blind, right? It's kind of like this this prank that I saw.
Hello, is anybody here? Can you help me?
Yes, sir.
Do you see a blue Mustang?
It's right here.
Can you help me?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Thank you. Is this the driver's side?
No, the driver's side.
Oh, I have to go to the driver's side.
Are you getting ready to drive this car?
Huh? Yeah. Are you pitching this against blind people?
No, but your car is on the curb halfway, sir.
I got it here. You might want to back away.
Okay, I love that face, okay? You should remember that face. The guy's freaked out, right? What are you doing driving blind? And let me tell you, that's exactly what Jesus is telling you and me today. It's exactly what he's telling you and me today. Is what are you doing driving blind? If there is sin and junk in our lives, it is affecting, it's going to destroy people. It's going to destroy our families. It's going to destroy our friends. It's going to destroy us. So if we don't want to drive our family into a pit, we got to let God do surgery on us first. And that starts with Jesus and his book. It starts with getting our vision fixed. It starts with becoming people who are humble and living humbly, listening to him each day. So as we close, let's apply this specifically to our lives. First of all, who are you following? Are you in the car of a blind driver? If so, you'll end up in the pit. Or are you learning to follow Jesus and let him be the one who can see for you and lead you into the path of sight and good things? Secondly, what sins are growing like tumors in your life and blocking your vision, your spiritual vision? Name them to God. Confess them. Ask forgiveness for them. He loves you. He wants the best for you. He wants to help you remove them and give you sight in those areas so you can help others. And then thirdly, in what ways can we treat others more graciously? Not judgmentally, not stingy, not bitter, but graciously, like Ken and Floyd did for Rose. Remember, Jesus promises that he will reward our graciousness and our generosity far more than we could ever imagine. It will be worth it. It'll be worth it. Let's pray together. Lord, today, as we've taken a few minutes to spend time in your word and with your people and in worship, Lord, I just pray that you would help us to really take it to heart. Help us to be people of grace, people of wisdom. Lord, I pray if there's somebody here who Jesus has never invited you to sit in the driver's seat of their life, that they would right now. They would say, Jesus, would you forgive my sin? Would you come into my life? Would you make me a Christian? Would you change me? Would you drive? Lord, for each of us, Lord, help us to keep doing that process of giving you the wheel, giving you the control. Oh, Lord, would you help us to share your grace as well as your truth? Help us to mentor people and disciple people and train people to follow you, but to model that above all. Oh, Lord, forgive us for our hypocrisy. Forgive us for the ways that you know that we're hypocritical. And help us to be the real deal, to be completely filled with your integrity, to be seeing. Oh, Lord, thanks for coming and giving us light, changing our lives, opening our eyes. Help us not to choose the blindness again, but to keep, Lord, just keep rooting it out, ripping it out. Keep doing it, Lord. We need it. We pray for it. Thank you for it all. In Jesus' name, amen. Well, let's close.